You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. NPR listeners know Paula Poundstone for her humor on the program Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's bringing that unique style of funny making to the Tower Theater in Fresno for a performance September 28th. And Paula Poundstone joins us now on FM 89. Paula, welcome.
Thanks so much.
Paula is very busy. She's not only appearing on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and doing tours like this, but she also has a new book out, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Also, a new podcast from NPR live from the Poundstone Institute. Paula, how do you find time to do all this stuff? This seems like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but you know what? It's work that sort of refuels itself. It's fun work. I'm the luckiest performer in the entire world. I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin production industry, it's good for the audience to come out and laugh for the night, and it's good for me too. It goes a long way towards healing the staggering depression that the last year has caused in all of the world. So it makes for a fun night.
Is it difficult for you, given the times that we're in right now, to stay funny? When we heard the president recently at the United Nations promising the total destruction of North Korea. These are very serious times. How does comedy fit in your view?
Oh, I think it's really important. I think it's a coping mechanism that nature has given us for just this moment, actually. It's really weird hearing that you're, headed towards nuclear war. But on the bright side, I like to tell myself, I do think it's going to bring back folk music. And I love folk music. So, so there's that. A night of telling my little jokes in front of an audience, it sort of feels like we're watching it from a distance more somehow for that particular stretch of time anyways, you know what I mean? It's like we're all huddled together making jokes and then we have to go back out into the world. But the period of time where we're huddled together making jokes is really, really fun.
How does this podcast differ from what the other things that
you
do?
You know what? I hate to say this, but can you hold on just a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Something got stuck.
So with that, Paul, I have to follow up with a different question. 14 cats, is that at last count, or maybe has it changed since the...
I do have 14 cats, yeah. Yeah, actually, you know...
How does one get 14 cats?
Well, I had 16 and two died. That's how I did it.
Oh.
People say to me all the time, they'll go, oh, do they find you? No, they don't find me. I've gone to the shelter and gotten cats 14 times. In fact, far more than that, because I've had many more in my lifetime. But and I also have two German Shepherd mixed dogs who are on the verge of driving me crazy right now in my room. I have a housekeeper. We have so much fur between the cats and the dogs that you really have to vacuum. Certainly every other day, maybe every day. And so I have someone come in like a couple mornings a week, mostly just to vacuum. And she just came to my bedroom door and she doesn't speak English very well. And I speak very little Spanish. And so we don't do that good together communication wise. But from what I could make out, there was a toy mouse stuck in the vacuum cleaner hose. And when she went to get the toy mouse out, she used, I think she used like a wooden dowel of some for, and it's now the dowel is stuck in the vacuum cleaner, and that's what she came to tell me.
Oh, no.
I said, just don't worry about it. I'll take care of it later.
So were the German Shepherds first, or are these cats, and how did they?
No, I've had the cats for longer than I've had the dogs, and the cats pretty much school the dogs. Every now and then they like to run through the mass of cats and make them scatter everywhere. But for the most part, it's the other way around. For the most part, the cats dominate the dogs.
Did they have any idea what they were getting themselves into? Wait, there's 14 cats in this house?
Yeah. I think they were all excited when I first brought them home from the shelter. And then they're like, wait, not so much. No, they get along, actually. They do get along. And they were, and you know, we've had this heat wave. It's hard to complain about weather because of all the horrible natural disasters around the world right now. So while poor Florida and Texas and the areas were suffering so horribly badly, we were having a heat wave here in Southern California. No one hardly mentioned it because it seemed rude under the circumstances. But it was the hottest temperatures I've ever experienced in Southern California. And my cats were just draped everywhere. You know, sometimes I feel guilty that I don't pet them enough. But I had a break from that guilt during the heat wave because they didn't even want pet. They were just like, don't touch me, it's hot. Anyways, you know, the good thing about having 14 cats, and there's very little good about it, but the good thing about 14 cats is that I never have to watch a YouTube cat video because there's one in front of me 24 hours a day.
So you have this new podcast out, and this is a little different than some of the things you do, but it's also in front of a live audience. Why is that, and how is the podcast working out?
It's been fun. It's called Live from the Poundstone Institute. It's a comedy podcast made by NPR. Each episode is a quest to find all the world's knowledge and mock it relentlessly. We do it in front of a small, live and lively audience. Right now, we're taping it in a performance space in the back of a comic book store in Hollywood. And there's a Dungeness quality about it. But it's, as it was described to me, a low-ceilinged, high-energy room. It's been fun. You know, the backbone of the show is talking to the scientists who do the unlikely studies that are often became sort of a staple of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And Doug Berman, who makes Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Car Talk, had the idea that what if I had the chance to talk to those scientists? It's not the whole show, but it's the backbone of the show. And we've also had some of the funniest people alive come on to take the Poundstone personality survey. We've had Dana Carvey, Larry Wilmore, Jay Leno, Dick Cavett, Tig Notaro, Kevin Nealon, Tiffany Haddish, and we just had John Waters and Ed Begley Jr. So it's been a hoot. It's been fun. And I don't know, it's a podcast. You know, one of the few things that we have in common as human beings at this point in our lives is that, we don't eat our young and we have a podcast. everyone has a podcast. And you can find it, by the way, through the NPR website or through my website or through iTunes or what do they always say in advertising, wherever fine podcasts are available.
Now, you also have the new book. I understand this is a memoir in some sense, not just a comedy work.
Yes, definitely. It's a funny book. That's its number one job. It's about my life raising a house full of kids and animals. But I tell the story of that through the course of conducting experiments, doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy. Each chapter is written as an experiment with the hypothesis and the conditions and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written. And it took place over the course of 7 years. So it tells the story of my kids growing up and my challenge to, figure out parenting to the best of my ability. And the experiments were largely, simple experiments. They ranged. One, for example, was I went backpacking with my oldest daughter, who, by the way, has cerebral palsy and I have a bad back. So we were quite a pair to draw to. In one of the experiments is I hug everyone I meet. One of the experiments is called the Get Wired experiment, where I learned to use a computer. That chapter probably took place several years ago, but even so, I came to computers later than many people did. And what's really interesting about that chapter. I mean, mostly its job is to be funny, but it's also real. I mean, I was quite sincere in my effort, and I did keep careful field notes. One of the fascinating things about the Get Wired experiment is by the time I came to computers, a lot of people were already doing that stuff and already weren't recognizing how it was affecting their lives. And it was a byproduct. I didn't do this intentionally. The experiments were sincere, and therefore I actually didn't know where they would take me. But it was interesting after the fact to realize that, you know, I was an uncompromised brain before I began that experiment. And I was a, you know, and most people don't recognize, most people are sort of a frog in a pot over what's happened to them with these silly, stupid, horrible, awful machines. And, you know, as I looked back on my notes, on my field notes from this period where I was learning to use a computer, you know, the word lonely, the word exhausted came up a lot. Frustrated. You know, there is no frustration like computer frustration, except for maybe dealing with like the healthcare system. But it was interesting. I mean, I didn't write it to prove that, you know, that computers are awful. But I got to say, as you read that chapter, you go like, oh wow, yeah, they are kind of awful. Whereas, you know, had I not kept notes before, I'm not sure I would have remembered by now that they are. Oh, anyways, one of the chapters is I take up swing dancing, which I absolutely suck at, but I love. I started out, you know, because my idea was it was upbeat music and it was, you know, a group experience. And so it would be good, you know, socially, it would be fun. And I was so bad that I really had to, I was holding the group back. So I started taking privately, which, of course, did away with the social aspect of it. And then my teacher couldn't even use the upbeat music because I was just so bad. I mostly swing dance to the blues. I do the Charleston to Fire and Rain. It looks like Tai Chi when I do it.
Paula Poundstone with us today on Valley Public Radio. She's going to be in Fresno at the Tower Theater, September 28th. Before we go, Paula, you've been on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me for how many years now?
You know, I'm not sure. I think 15 or 16.
How has that evolved, this being in the same room on the same stage with Peter and the other regular guests that are on there? Is there a familiarity that allows you two to feed off of each other, or is it sometimes more beneficial from a comedy standpoint to have those fresh interactions? What's that like, getting to know Peter and being working together for so long on that?
One of the joys of my life is trying to knock Peter off his horse. Oh, wait, wait, don't tell me. You know, the truth is, people come up to me all the time and they go, oh, I listen to you every week on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And although I never say this in front of them, the truth is, I'm not on every week because we have a, for those who don't know, it's a weekly news quiz show. And we have a panel of three each week who compete, I don't know, for the mantle of most informed, I guess. But it's a comedy show. Our first job is to be funny. They must have about maybe 15 panelists that we rotate in no particular order that I know of. But I end up being on, well, I'm on probably once a month, but then when they take a vacation and they do like a, you know, a clip show or something, I tend to be on the clip shows and the vacation shows. So I guess it gives the illusion that I'm there a couple of times a month. But so I don't know, because I'm not there, and it's only a weekly show, so it's already not as frequent as one might think. And then, of course, it's like last week I was on with Amy Dickinson, who I love. And I don't know, somebody was asking me like how many times I've been on with Amy Dickinson. And the truth is, you know, go back over 16 years and then you go, well, I'm only on once a month. And you go, you know, a handful of times. So there's a, you know, there's still a fresh quality about being on with each of these guys. And the show is based on the week's news, and therefore, and the comics, well, not the comics, the panelists have no script. We know that the questions are going to be about the week's news, but we don't I mean, as far as I know, none of us like write jokes ahead of time for it or anything like that. It really is very spontaneous for the panel anyways. And so there's, generally speaking, a very fresh feeling about each show. And it's really fun to do. I mean, I have made a career for 30-something years working alone. So it's fun to be with other people on stage.
And you can see that solo show with Paula Poundstone headlining at the Tower Theater September 28th in Fresno. Again, tickets are available there, and Paula joins us now. You can hear her on the new Poundstone podcast, live from the Poundstone Institute. It's available on the NPR app, and her new book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. It came out earlier this year. Paula Poundstone, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot. It was fun talking with you.